L in Linux means lazy, but the S in Solaris means super, because it's really built as a server operating system. They come up with a lot of neat things. Now, we have heard about Sun being bought out by Oracle, and hopefully they'll be hiring back all our friends back there to work.
Only assuming they want to be hired back.
Yeah, there we go. Okay.
Well, that's true.
We have live CDs, so if you want to boot up with the live Solaris, it'll make it a lot easier to kind of follow up on what he's talking about. He's going to be talking about Solaris administration.
Those are the old ones.
As a viewpoint.
Just pass the spindle.
Those are the new ones.
Okay. Here, I'll be an Indian giver.
So we'll pass those around and boot up with your laptop so you can follow along. He's going to kind of, in the approach of a Linux administrator new to Solaris, quite a bit of Solaris that they're both Unix and same, but there's a lot of, as far as where things are at, are a little bit different, naturally. So we're going to be handing these out, so if you want to boot up for a bit. We also have, for those who want them, handbooks. We'll pass those around for those who want them. With that, as soon as we calm down, get everything passed out, and those who want to boot up on Solaris, boot it up. We'll have, Jeff will begin on it.
Now, first of all, we need to thank Jeff Lagulu for burning the CDs and supplying the handbooks, and he's also given us swag. So if you ask a question, be careful. You may see a T-shirt flying in your direction. Also got a couple of hats here. These I know fly well. Not going to wait for you to get booted into Solaris. It being a live CD, no matter how much performance tuning they do, it's only going to go as fast as your CD-ROM can spin, so leave you to fire that up while we're going. Those of you who are hoping for an organized, well-thought-out, very logically coherent presentation tonight, sorry, this isn't it. This is a brain dump. Got the idea for this presentation a while ago. I was reading a blog by Ben Rockwood, who is a very good writer on things Solaris and Sun. And he actually had an article, it was a while ago, talking about some of the difficulties that people who are familiar with Linux or some other form of Unix have when they come to Solaris, because there's all sorts of little gotchas that keep popping up. And it can be a little bit of an adjustment. And he had a couple of good blogs about that. And I thought, yeah, that'd be a good topic for a presentation. So finally got around to doing it, and here we are. So what I've done is pretty much a brain dump. All the stuff that I know that bites people, I've just thrown into some slides. Definitely encourage questions as you get the CDs fired up, poke around, stuff, something doesn't make sense. Ask questions. I want to talk as little as possible. One thing I do need to point out is there are a couple of variants of Solaris. There is Open Solaris, and then there is the Solaris that you will typically find used more in the quote-unquote enterprise-y environments. They are similar, but not quite the same. Open Solaris tends to be a little bit more of a user-friendly experience. They've taken some real nice graphical administration tools that really don't exist in the base Solaris. There's a few more features, some functionality that's a little bit different. For the most part, everything that I'm going to talk about applies equally to either one. There are a few exceptions, and I'll try and remember to point those out as we stumble across them. So why do we need this talk? There's a lot of stuff in Solaris that's backwards compatible. It's got a lot long history. I mean, Solaris itself has been around for, I don't know what it is, 15 years, maybe more. It was Sunos before that. A lot of historical stuff that is there. You don't necessarily know why it's there because nobody ever uses it, but you stumble across it while you're looking around the system. It's like, what's that? I'll try and talk through some of that. There's some things in Solaris that don't have a Linux equivalent.
Like Backspace?
All right. Why, yeah. No backspace.
Do an exec bash and then your backspace will start to work.
Say what?
Do an exec bash and your backspace will start to work.
I'm at the language prompt.
Oh, installing.
No, booting.
Boot. Okay, booting off the CD. Yeah. Maybe they'll fix that someday. But.
Control H or control much.
Yeah, backspace matches
actually,
the control.
The delete key works for backspace.
Yeah, backspace. Once you get into a shell environment, you can do an STTY erase backspace and it'll fix that. But yes, it is annoying in the boot up process. And then there's a few things in Solaris that have the same name in Linux. They don't work quite the same. There's some options that are missing. There's some options that are different. There's some options that you think should be there that aren't. We'll try and cover those, too. So, one of the things that really confuses people, at least first off, is they look for /home. And they think, why is my home directory, when I just did a local install, not in /home? And it's because /home is usually is reserved for the auto mounter by default. Solaris ships with an auto mounter that will pretty much assume that your home directory is going to be an NFS mount. It is assuming that your home directory is not on the local machine. And until you disable control of home through the auto mounter, you are not going to have access to /home. You can't even make directories in there.
Solaris came out in 1992, by the way.
Thank you.
What's your root password? Root?
That is root, yeah.
Well, right. The first root version of Solaris was 2, version 2.
Are you trying to collect
because
Keisha?
Because SunOS 4 was Solaris 1, even though it wasn't called Solaris.
Yeah, yeah, Solaris version numbers are another interesting, yeah. We won't even talk about that. Wikipedia can straighten you out on that if you're really curious.
Well, and the reason it assumes your home directory is on NFS is probably because Sun invented NFS.
Yeah. And the network is the computer.
There you go.
Yeah.
So home is where your NFS nodes are?
Well, that's when they've got it. He can't mount the cloud.
Or is that where they should be placed?
Careful when you talk about mounting cloud.
Typically, what's going to happen in the environment that Solaris assumes you're going to be in is it assumes that you're on machine A over here, your home directory lives on machine B, so you mount your home directory from B to A on NFS, and then if you go over to C, well, you can mount your home directory from B over to C, too. So it just kind of follows you around.
Okay. But the initial sort of like server of home, yeah. When you configure that one.
I'm sorry?
The initial server that has home on it.
Well, yeah, then on that server you'd end up actually turning off the auto mounter because you don't want to try and mount over yourself.
Well, it does like a local auto mount, right? Like the from whatever it is, the home to home.
It might. I haven't played with it enough to. It's one of those things that it's there. It's probably more of historical significance than anything else. I don't know how many places are actually still using the auto mounter /home.
Yeah, back at the factory, the 15,000 or whatever employees at Sun, you know, you sit down at the machine, you log in, it works. Doesn't matter who's the officer in or what workstation you're on. Their home directory is available. You're using this for your authentication. So you install Solaris, you log into the machine when it's done, and everything's there. So
because they're using it, probably because they're using NIS maps to say.
Yeah,
yeah, there's
or LDAP, hopefully, by now.
I've seen other places that.
Yeah, and I know of some places that are using auto mounters and LDAP maps and all that, but they're not specifically using it for user directories. They're using it for data directories that other servers need to access. And maybe that's a little bit of a different scenario, but it's still the same principle.
Well, I'm just curious, how many people have ever used the auto mounter before?
How many people know Linux has an auto mounter? And yeah. Not for things like flash drives and CDs.
Oh, shucks.
See, that's one of the things that Solaris makes it really central to what they're doing, even to the point of what you see under the root file system. And the corresponding thing in Linux just is relatively unused.
Jeff, you're not quietly trying to convert us all over.
I am not here to preach at all.
No, this is, after all, Unix.
Yeah. And you may see a thing called AutoFS, AutoFS, AutoMounter, pretty much the same thing. So if you look under slash, you look at the top of the file system hierarchy, you'll see slash home. We talked about that. There's also this slash export. And typically, slash export is going to be your largest file system, or your largest local file system, at least. And that is kind of a dumping ground. You might see home directories, local home directories, created under slash export slash home. Those of you who are familiar with zones, or who have heard of zones, Solaris virtual machines, might see an export zones where all the zone-specific stuff lives. If I'm going to share directories out by NFS, I might put them under slash export, and so I'm exporting from slash export. So all sorts of different stuff can be under here.
You say they're the largest file system?
Usually, not always. Doesn't have to be.
Is it really a file system, or is it a directory structure? Or
it's a file system.
It's a, what you usually end up with is under root, you'll have slash home, which is the auto mounter, slash user, which we'll talk about in a moment, slash export, and then there's also a slash opt and slash sbin and some of the other specific stuff that you can see.
The mount point where
right.
Stuff gets mounted.
Right. And Solaris uses slices instead of partitions. But X slash export might be its own slice, and you've got a file system on that slice.
I'm thinking of like export being configuration file pointing to stuff.
Oh, you mean like etc?
Yeah,
like NC exports.
Yeah,
that's different.
Yeah, there is no etc exports in Solaris. We'll talk about that too.
Slices being the equivalent of like LVM.
No, slices are actually hard configured. Think closer to partitions.
It's just, where's the battery?
It's equivalent to MS-DOS partitions. It's just
until you try to put an MS-DOS partition onto a slice, and then it gets a little bit screwy.
It's a different type of partition table, and they call partition slice and spread. It's conceptually
different.
Yeah. Somebody chuck this back to Andrew. Oh. And check this back to Stan for asking.
Cool. It's the scroll bar. What? Oh, better. There. Clean
clothes.
Now we need our swag pants.
Moving right along.
Friday thought.
Yeah. That's what I don't get about swag is 99% of the time swag, the largest size is XL. It's like
I've got 2XLs up here.
They don't know their target market.
Yeah. Does anybody want a 2XL?
I'll trade for 2X.
I wasn't thinking.
And I ordered the shirts. There were plenty of 2XLs. I got some of the other
boxes over here. You want to chuck that back?
Where's your rubber band?
Yep. Do I get a gas
passing? Okay, so there's another thing that you need to know about the auto mounter. We haven't talked about it yet, but under this root directory, there's also a slash net.
This one back. No, keep it. No, give it somebody.
Here. There's also a slash net, and even though I hate the analogy, I'll repeat it. Somebody once described this as being roughly the equivalent of Windows Network Neighborhood. Yeah. Because if you cd to slash net and then go to a directory under that that's the name of a machine, it's on your network, it will auto-mount all the shares that machine are exporting underneath slash net slash machine name.
What services do they use to do all these mounting?
There are auto mount maps. that are defined in somewhere under ETC. I don't remember the name of the file off the top of my head. Auto master, I think. Auto remote.
Yeah.
That defines how all that behavior works.
Yeah, and so that's where it gets information, whether or not.
Right. Yeah.
Well, it gets it as far as like. It gets it in terms of it said auto.master will point to like auto.net, which is a sub that says that basically in this case would have like a pattern.
Yeah. Okay. So unlike Windows, there's no broadcasting thing.
Right. That's the manual way to do it. You can also store your auto mount maps in LDAP or NIS.
Oh, right.
Okay.
Jeff,
no CDE.
Hmm?
No CDE.
CDE does exist on this on Solaris, although it may not be on the CD. I think they had to strip some stuff out to.
The root password on a CD.
I think if you.
I don't think it has one.
Yeah,
give it about
10
more minutes.
So you keep that for passing things back.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
they should have asked you for one when you were booting off of it. They should have asked you to give it a root password.
You did.
So anyway, we'll hold on to the idea of root. We will come back to that shortly.
Okay. I assume you talk about Jack, too.
Hmm?
I assume you talk about Jack.
Also. I don't know Jack.
I'm Jack.
Oh, Jack.
Root log is not an English.
Yeah, Jack.
Yeah.
Root log is.
Nope, CD.
And then I forget, what's the.
I'll give you a hint. What you want is PF exec.
Yeah, PF exec.
Server user, SEO. Alias, sudo equals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, sudo works.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Does it? I didn't realize they were shipping it on there.
Yeah, they asked you for a password, but not the password.
Yeah, it's your password.
Your password is what sudo takes.
Well, it still at work with or without a password.
Well, it's root, and then enter.
Do a man pf exec. And
there's Jack, and then open Solaris.
So, anyway, other things you might find under the file system.
Pf exec actually minus works.
Yep.
But sudo doesn't.
PFExec is part of role-based access control, and it lets you assume different roles or execute things under a different profile, to be technical about it. So anyway, other things under slash that are not quite what you might be expecting. Slash proc is there, but it is strictly for the use of process information. You are not going to see all sorts of kernel tunables living under here where you can just echo a value to a file someplace and expect things to change. So, if you want to do something like change memory usage, memory configuration, that kind of thing, where you might do this with syscontrol in Linux or by writing to proc, you'd actually add an etc system, which is its own system configuration file. It's a little bit goofy. It's the only config file that I can think of that uses an asterisk as a comment. And to have your changes take effect, it needs to you need a reboot. If you do anything with Oracle, you are probably intimately familiar with etc system because it requires some very specific memory parameters.
What the NDD command, is that like the syscontrol command on VSD box?
NDD command is a way to tweak various drivers. It does TCP settings, it does network driver configurations. It is not by any means universal to every piece of hardware, but there's a fairly large number that it does.
So there's no real time tuning like syscontrol?
There is some. It is not. It is not as universal as it is in Linux. Okay, so if you look under slash user, ton of stuff. And on the live CD, I'm not completely sure that all of this is there.
Still a ton of stuff.
Hmm?
Still a ton of stuff. No 5-bin. You got ADM. No ASET.
No ASET?
No, CCS. Yeah, you got CCS. And you got DT.
Okay, so user 5 bin. Symlink to user bin, specify system 5 binaries. These are things which will not necessarily work exactly the way is the things that you're used to on Linux, about which more a little bit later. User ADM is a symlink to var ADM, which is roughly the same as var log on Linux. Solaris has a var log too, but it is not quite as full of stuff as var ADM is. That slide, although it probably should have been, you might see a user temp. That's a symlink to var temp. User temp is really old historical things that you think who uses it anymore, and then you delete it and you find out that VI breaks. Ask me how I found that out. user ASET is the automated security enhancement tool, which is probably worth its own discussion at some point. It is strictly for the use of root. User CCS is kind of an interesting directory. All your development tools, LD, AR, make, anything that you're going to use as you're compiling a program is going to live under user CCS, except for a compiler. There is no compiler there. It used to be that Solaris did not ship with a compiler at all. Now I think they are shipping GCC, but that's in a different directory we'll get to a little bit sooner. Get to in a minute. Also, at least off of OpenSolaris, you can easily download Sun Studio, which is a development environment compiler whole thing, but that's going to live under Opt someplace. So if you're expecting to find a compiler, do not look under user CCS. If you're looking for make and you get command not found, it is because user CCS is not in your default path. And if you expect make to work and you run it against a program which expects GNU make, that's not going to work either. The make is the system 5 make. It does not have all the GNU make tweaks and features. And you'll have to use gmake, which we'll get to very shortly. User DT is all the CDE stuff. Somebody asked about that a minute ago. So that's user desktop is the way I think of that. If you're using that still, you're probably hopelessly stuck in the past and it's kind of a sad environment, but it's there if you want it. User kernel, hardly ever have to go in here. This is bits and pieces of stuff that lives under slash kernel, which is exactly what you'd think it would be. That's where all the kernel drivers, config files, the kernel itself live. User KVM, ignore it. User open windows, or open win, the open windows stuff, which is even older and sadder than CDE. User platform has some interesting stuff in it. That is all architecture specific stuff. So depending on what you're on, you might have a user platform Sun4U or Sun4V or i86. That's hardware dependent. But a command called printdag will tell you a ton of stuff about the system you're running on. So that's not in your path, but it probably should be. User platform, whatever your platform name is, sbin.
What was that again?
Prtdiag. That's dumps out a bunch of hardware information. Then you get user proc, symlink to the process tools under slash bin. And when you say process tools, there are a whole bunch of commands that start with a P. There's a P file, there's a P flag, P stop, P run, P stack. Can't remember them all. If you do a man P stack, for those of you who have the CD run, you get a list of them all and all the different things that you can do.
With respect to laptops, how is it with regard to wireless?
Actually, my work laptop, the OpenSolaris CD, the first OpenSolaris that came out, found my laptop wireless card, worked with it perfectly.
It came up here just fine.
Yeah. the Napix disk that I put in right after it didn't find it, which really surprised me.
And of course, I have a Linux system that creates problems.
Well, everybody got a chance to look at the P files man page to see some of the things that are available, process utilities. Pgrep is another nice one, returns process IDs.
That exists under Linux too.
I know there is a pgrep. I don't think there's some of the other tools.
Yeah, pgrep and pkill, I know.
Pkill, yeah, pkill works. I don't know about a prun or a pstack.
No. Yeah.
And pfiles, by the way, is roughly gives you the same information as LSOF does. So you can... You're not going to have a native LSOF, but you can do a pfiles on a PID, and you'll get back essentially the same information. User SADM, SADM, sysadd type files. This is another one where you probably don't go into a whole lot, except for one command that if you're a GUI kind of a person, there's this thing called SMC, which is the Solaris Management Console. Personally, I never use it, but I know some people like to, so... That is there if you really want to take a look at it. More stuff under user. User SFW. This is where the Linux people are going to feel right at home. SFW stands for Sun Freeware. Yeah, that's another historical name. There used to be, actually still is a site called sunfreeware.com. It was run by a guy by the name of Christensen, I think. And what he did was he took all the GNU utilities that he could find, all the open source stuff that everybody said, hey, how come this isn't in Solaris? He made Solaris packages for it. So the first thing you did after you installed Solaris and you wanted to put together a decent image is you went out to Sun Freeware and you downloaded everything. Well, I think he actually wound up getting hired by Sun at one point. And a lot of the packages from Sun Freeware now live under user SFW. So any of your GNU utilities are going to be under here.
Therefore, GMake.
Yeah, and they all, and the GNU utilities that duplicate the names of Solaris utilities are all prefaced with a G. So you've got things like GMake and GTAR, a bunch of other stuff under there. Yes. I have another one.
It's just like under OpenBSD.
Yeah, that has a GTAR too, doesn't it?
G, everything.
Yeah. If you're looking for GCC, it lives under user SFW. That too probably is not in your path, so if you decide that you want the GNU utilities, you probably want to set your path accordingly. User UCB is all the stuff that came out of the BSD tools. Way back when, Solaris had a very close BSD tie, and it... That's where all that stays for his backwards compatibility. User XPG4, XPG6 is the POSIX standards compliance. This is something I have not played a lot with, but my understanding is that this works more or less the same way as if you set POSIXly correct in your environment in Linux, and everything starts behaving strictly according to POSIX standards. Why you'd want that, I don't know. User X is a symlink to user OpenWin. User X11R6, symlink to user X11. User X11 is Xorg stuff.
A lot of that, like POSIX and UCB and stuff like that, is because there's just legacy
stuff. They need to say we're POSIX compliant so they can fill out the forms for somebody. Yeah. And user local, there is none unless you create it. So that tends to...
Theoretically, that's where you use opt, right?
Right.
Yeah, you can use opt if you want. /temp, this is a little bit different. This confuses people at first. /temp does not even really live on the slice that you think it does. It doesn't live under the root slice. It is actually carved out of swap space, and you can resize it. There is a file /etc/vfs/tab, which is roughly the equivalent of fstab in Linux. And /temp is always going to be there, But you can define how much space you want slash temp to have in VFS tab.
And where is it? Is this on Spice that it's on, or is it in the file system?
Swap space is probably going to be its own slice. And then you can just define in VFS tab how much space you want temp to have, and it comes out of that swap space. Yeah.
If you have more than one user on the same server, is there multiple slash temps, or do they all use the same one?
All use the same one. I mean, you can always do stuff like define your own temp directory and then set a variable. That,
and if you put stuff in temp, it uses swap space, right?
Yeah.
And you can have as many swap or swap files or...
Yeah, you can always add swap files, too.
And it's cleared out every... Both of which things, the fact that it uses swap space and the fact that it's cleared out of every reboot, I've met at least one Linux administrator that was trying to do stuff with Solaris that got caught by both.
Yep. So, when it says temporary files, it really means temporary. If you want it to survive a reboot, put it someplace else. Var temp will survive a reboot. Slash temp will not. I'm not sure about var temp on Linux. And there are distributions that will actually clear out temp for you at boot, but I'm not sure if that's certainly not standard.
Just clear out temp files of every value.
It'll clear out core files.
I run a Subversion server on CentOS and work. I had a post commit hook which was doing a checkout of the temp, and then rsyncing to the web servers. I kept having the checkout fail because TempWatch was killing half my checkout. like every night it would kill half my checkout. And so I try and do SVN up and complain about a bunch of missing lines.
Yeah.
And so I stuck it under var slash temp, and then that gets cleared out and reboot. So the script failed again. So I had to put a thing in there. So if SVN up fails, delete the directory, do a fresh checkout, try again, and then ours.
Isn't there a way to tell TempWatch just don't clear anything newer than 2 days? I mean, that sounds like it would solve your problem right there.
That's what it does, but that's if you do a checkout and then an update, only the new files.
Okay, yeah.
The older ones. Yeah. It was doing what it was supposed to do. And doing quite well.
Slash root. There is none. You can create one if you want. A lot of Solaris admins will look at you and say, why are you doing a silly thing like that? You probably shouldn't be doing that much as root anyway. But there's nothing to say, you can't create slash root and make it root's home. One thing that bit me is that someone, I don't know where this came through, created a slash dot profile and put various environment variables in it, and then things weren't working the way I expected. And somebody said, look at dot profile. Oh, that's why that's failing. So you can actually create a dot profile and
override
your environment settings. Yes, it's it was trying to figure out why things were getting created with screwy permissions, and then somebody set a umask and slash dot profile. Sudo. This actually kind of surprised me. I was under the impression it doesn't ship with Solaris, or at least it's not the recommended way to encourage things. But now, Lee, you were saying it is on the CD?
Which is?
Sudo.
Oh, yeah, Sudo.
Yeah, okay.
Although, I don't know what Jack's password is, so it doesn't work, but pfexec does.
Yeah, there is.
Use pfexec to set your password.
The last version of OpenSolaris live CD, the login was Jack and the password was Jack. So, PF exec and supply Jack is the password.
Well, PF exec works.
Can you do PF exec SU and then tell Jack and then you root?
Jack is not the sudo response? But I can do pfexec su minus without a password, and it works.
That is because pfexec is actually not looking at the sudoers file.
Ah, okay.
Right.
PFExec is part of the role-based access control. It's for profile execution, and it lets you execute commands under a profile different than your normal user profile. And that's all defined under etc *attr*. Yeah. Security.attr, profile.attr, there's another one. Open Solaris actually comes with it configured reasonably well.
Is there like a tool like PFTrace? Because I know OpenBSD has something similar where it's like PFTrace and PFExec, where you can actually run something and it can see what permissions it needs to have, or what things it needs to do as root.
Oh, so that you can grant...
Or do you use VTrace for that?
There is a utility. I don't remember the name, but I know Bob Netherton refers to it when he's blogging through. He talks about it.
Because that's like the whole reason why they came out with it for OpenBSD, because you can say, I want to run Apache on this box. Okay, so I'm going to use this PFTrace to run Apache, and then it'll record what it wants to do as root.
Yeah, and there's an equivalent tool for SE Linux, too, where you can set it in, I guess it's audit mode, where it just tells you what it's doing but doesn't actually enforce anything.
Right.
But the big difference between RBAC and SE Linux is that the role-based access control actually works on user accounts. It associates roles, it associates... rights, privileges with user accounts. It's not on a per process basis. So anyway, if you take a look at those files, the various attribute files under etc and etc security, you'll kind of get an idea of how it's set up. It is fairly complicated, but fortunately, at least Open Solaris gives you a nice little GUI tool that takes a lot of the pain away. A lot of shops will not use this because it is kind of complicated to configure manually. So that's that. Miscellaneous commands, things I couldn't figure out where to put anywhere else. PS, I know we've had this discussion at least once before in here. There is the System 5 PS, which probably you're going to want to run with -EF. It is more or less the equivalent of PSWAUX under Linux. If you run PSWAUX on Solaris, it will turn around and say, no, we can't do that. If you want to actually use that syntax, you need to run the PS under user UCB, which is the BSD compatible tools. TAR, at least System 5 TAR, does not support -Z or -J, the compression flags. So if you want to use that in conjunction with compression, you usually have to call gzip or bzip and then pipe it through to TAR. However, there is gtar, we talked about that, which would be under user SFW, and that does behave just the way you'd expect it to. Awk, I've found out, does not handle really large text files. I ran into this at least once where I fed it some huge file and it basically ran out of steam, and then I ran it through gawk, the new awk, and it handled it just fine.
How large is really large?
If I could remember, I would tell you.
Generally, you have a 2 gig. Most of Solaris has a caveat on anything over 2 gig as far as the really large file support.
I don't think it was as big as 2 files. As big as 2 gig. Yeah. I know it was a system log of some sort, and I don't think I was generating anything quite that large.
Interestingly, I think, wasn't Solaris one of the first, if not the first, platform that had GNU tools built for it? I mean, not included but I think in the beginning...
It's kind of what they GNU themselves
switched up and all. Yeah, that's what they developed it on.
If you like the long options to commands, most Solaris commands do not use them. GNU tools do. So, once again, user SFW is your friend. NFS servers. We kind of touched on this a little bit. There is no etc exports. If you want to configure an NFS share, you do it under etc DFS, DFS tab, DFS stands for Distributed File System. Or you can use the share command, which is essentially what goes into that DFS tab anyway. ZFS, which is another topic all unto itself, has a share NFS property. You can just turn NFS shares on and off at will by manipulating that property on a ZFS file system. Really easy to do, requires no config file editing at all, remembers it after a reboot, so it works real well. And I think in later versions of Solaris, they even remember to turn on the NFS server if you turn the share NFS property on. When it first came out, I tried to do a share NFS on the ZFS file system, and it wasn't working. I'm like, why isn't it working? Well, the NFS server isn't running. They've since fixed that. Go ahead. Monitoring tools, there is no top, at least not by default. You can probably go and install it, but you've got a thing called PRStat, which does pretty much the same thing.
He's got top.
Does he?
Although, I it used to be, probably not anymore if they're shipping it, but it used to be that top wasn't always good or accurate on Solaris.
It was always more of a resource hog in any event.
Oh, yeah. So it seems to be running okay.
PR stuff.
Oh, there's a monitor server. Yeah, there's a free machine.
PRStat, there's also VMStat, NetStat you're familiar with. IOStat's kind of neat. input output statistics. Takes an interval just the same way as the others do. There's a really handy version of it which you can actually use to scan devices for errors if things are misbehaving. IOStat is your friend.
IOStat works on Linux.
It doesn't have the EN flag though, does it?
I haven't tried that.
Yeah. MPStat gives you VMStat on a per processor basis, which is kind of neat. You can see what all your processors are doing independently of each other. ZFS has its own IOStat. I don't recall if the actual IOStat even knows about ZFS file systems, but you run that zpool IOStat command and it will actually start telling you the activity that your zpool is doing. We talked about LSOF and pfiles. Kernel. Solaris, at least the base Solaris, not so much open Solaris, you're not going to be recompiling your kernel. It does have loadable kernel modules. You can have a mod info, which gives you information about the running modules that are currently loaded. Kind of like lsmod gives you a little bit more information. Also gives you a mod load and a mod unload, same as rmmod and insmod. Does not have any kind of module dependency issues that I'm aware of, at least, that like you'd find on Linux. You know how you'd have modules that depend on each other, and then you end up doing an insmod, and it says can't load. So you do a mod probe, and it loads everything that's required. There's no equivalent to that in Solaris that I'm aware of. Also kind of cool, some of the mod probe command line arguments or insmod arguments where you want to pass really specific arguments to an individual module. Solaris uses config files. So a lot of times you can go under kernel drive, find whatever module you're working on, edit that, and then the next time you load the module, it comes up with the new parameters, which is really kind of nice.
You can do that on Linux too, just modpro.com.
Syntax on this is a lot friendlier though. Software packages. This slide is pretty much Solaris specific. It does not apply nearly as much to open Solaris. You got two types, file system and data streams. A file system package is basically a directory, and it's going to have a directory containing all the different stuff that needs to get installed, and it's going to have a couple of information files and a file that gives you some information about the package itself. And then you can have a data stream, which is basically that file system directory, or that file system package archived into one file. use the same command to install either one, which is package add. The syntax varies slightly from one to the other. You remove packages with package rm, and you can do a package trans, which will convert between one format and the other. Not often going to do that unless you're building your own packages. There is little to no dependency checking on Solaris packages. It might give you a warning that it kind of suggests that maybe you have such and such installed, but it's not going to say, hey, no, you have to force this package in because you're missing dependencies. It's on a level probably with Slackware, maybe a little bit more complicated as far as the dependency checking it does. So, yeah, it's never really been a problem that I've run into that didn't have that kind of dependency checking. Usually if something wasn't there, I knew it wasn't there, and I didn't care if it broke anyway. So, we'll hold off, stick on packages for a moment. Those of you who have the CD running, you will actually go, if you look under the administration tools, there is a package manager there. It will look a whole lot like Synaptic. Unfortunately, that is OpenSolaris specific. OpenSolaris uses what's called IPS, the image packaging system, and it has this very, very nice front end to it called PKG package. Works a whole lot like apt. And part of the reason for that is because Ian Murdoch put it together for Sun, one of the guys who started Debian. Patching. Patches have pretty much the same layout as file system patches, packages. You've got patch add and patch rm. You can install an entire patch cluster if you want. If you don't want to figure out what patches apply to me, what don't, you can just download the entire patch cluster, do an install cluster command that comes with the comes in the cluster archive, and it will apply all the patches that are relevant that that cluster contains. You may have to reboot a couple of times, but it usually works pretty well. Give yourself plenty of space under var, though, if you want to do that. A couple of gig is probably not a bad idea.
Any experience with APC under OpenSolaris?
APC?
Power control.
I have not done anything with that at all, no.
There doesn't seem to be any way to... the battery's going down from like 66% to 30% in half an hour. I guess that's not too terrible. But
are you talking about like ACPI?
ACP, I'm sorry.
Power management. ACPI. Yeah, not UPSs.
But there's no suspender hybrid options.
I have really not done enough with OpenSolaris to answer that. Jeff, you've run OpenSolaris on a laptop for a long time. What?
There is some kind.
It's emerging. It's gotten better.
One really cool thing about Solaris patches is that it saves information about patch state under var sadm. So if you decide, hey, this patch screwed up my system, I want to back it out, you can actually roll back that individual patch. And you can do your patch rm. It reads what the information under var sadm, and hopefully it will get you back to where you needed to be. Really good in terms of recovering systems if things go haywire. Does require a fair amount of disk space, though, so you usually want to make sure that if you're going to use that, make sure var is fairly large. And by default, patch add will always use that. There is an SM patch tool, which should figure out what patches you need for you. That's Sun provided. Goes through, looks at your system, analyzes against a patch list, and then we'll figure out what patches you need and install them. There's another really handy tool which I actually like better than SM Patch. It's called PCA, which is Patch Check Advanced, which is a Perl script that is maintained by some guy in France who, for whatever reason, decided he didn't like SM Patch and wrote his own tool that goes out and retrieves the patch list, analyzes your system, figures out what you need to install. I think he's actually got it set up now where you can set up a patch repository on your own network and just use that to pull patches off to multiple machines. It's really a nice script. Services. I think somebody mentioned SMF along the line. Processes, services, startup, completely different under Solaris than under Linux. We use what's called SMF, the Service Management Facility. Completely gets rid of the idea of init scripts. You look under etcrc.d, nothing. Gone. Empty. Or almost empty. There may be a few legacy things in there. What you do with SMF is you tell the system, I want this enabled, I want it disabled. It'll either run it or it'll turn it off. And if you want to re-enable it, you have to enable it again.
Is that capital S?
Capital S, capital M, capital F is what to Google for if you want to read more about it. There are a couple of commands that are unique to it. You can do a services, SVCS, and I usually like dash AV, and it'll dump everything out that it knows about that's under its control. And it'll give you some information about whether it's online or offline. You can manipulate the state of the services with SVC-ADM. If something is not set up right, the system tries to start the service, it fails for whatever reason, it'll mark the service in a maintenance state, and it will keep it in a maintenance state until you fix it. There's another version of the services command, which will tell you what's in a maintenance state and why, and it'll point you to a log. You can look at that log file. It'll usually give you a pretty good idea what's going on. Example I've used in a couple of cases is I will put something completely incorrect in an SSHD config file, then go to restart SSHD. SSHD says, hey, I don't understand the config file. You'll see SSH in a maintenance state. You go through, delete the additional garbage out of SSHD config, do an SVC ADM clear, comes right back up. Now, one of the things that this means is that you can't kill a process. You can kill it, but there's a restarter daemon who's responsible for making sure the processes stay running. If it sees something. What's that?
What happens if that daemon dies?
You know, I know I tried this once, and I think it pretty much did somehow respond itself, or init responded. But if somebody wants to kill that right now, the process is, I think, svcs.restart or something similar to that.
Yeah, I think
that
restarts.
Yeah, if it's started by init, yeah, they'll just keep reloading
I think the only, I remember specifically trying to mess with that when Solaris 10 first came out, and I think the only way I was able to really break it was by writing zeros over the binary.
Focus.
Yeah. So, this is probably the single biggest adjustment for people used to Linux coming to Solaris, is that the process management is just completely different. Each service has its own config files. I live under var service. It's XML. Probably the best thing to do if you want to add a new service is to take an existing one and modify it. And then the system will call various method scripts as appropriate, whether you want to stop something, start something, refresh it. When you say refresh, usually it's something like along the lines of reading a config file. And that lives under lib service method. Okay, extra stuff. Sun Freeware we talked about. They're still out there. Not as important as they used to be, but there's still a lot of good stuff out there. The up-and-coming thing, or maybe it's arrived by now, it's been around for several years, is BlastWave. And BlastWave basically gives you, once again, something resembling apt that you can use to retrieve third-party software. And it works real well. The criticism of it is that it has seemingly no sanity checking as to what you've already got installed. Anything that it thinks is a dependency, it's going to load for you. It doesn't matter if you're on your 15th version of Perl, you are going to get a 16th copy if you load something that's Perl related. It really does load a lot of extra stuff. Pros for that are that you're not going to run into problems with missing dependencies. Cons, tons of disk space and bandwidth. Disks, SCSI disks, are going to be labeled C something, T something, D something. It's controller target disk. On x86 platforms, you're probably going to be using serial ATA, which is just C something, D something. C0, T0 would be your first disk, or C0, D1 would be your second disk, etc. We talked about slicing. There is actually a FDisk program on x86 that you can call from within format. Those of you who have laptops, type in format, and it should show you what disks are connected to the system. This is a quick and easy way to make sure that your stuff is connected correctly.
No disk found.
Really? It doesn't see the disk on the laptop?
Wait a minute. I'm not.
PF exec format, possibly.
Yeah, be rude. Sorry.
Yep. So it should show you what disks are available.
C70.
I'm sorry?
It shows me the two disks. It doesn't show any partitions inside of it. It does show the two disks.
If you go into format, you should be able to do a P for print or a V for verify, and it'll show you the slices.
It's asking for the. Okay, so I do zero.
Yeah, you have to select which disk you're manipulating. Yeah.
Asking for number of data
samples. Control D will get you out of format.
Or control C.
Is there anything like format-l?
Yeah. Print VTOC. PRT VT0C.
PRT.
Yep.
VTOs.
Print VTOC.
Print virtual table of contents. This is roughly the equivalent of dumping the partition table.
C7D0, no such file or directory. What's the format?
Did you run it as root?
Yeah.
So I need to know the disk.
Yeah, you need to give it a device name.
What's the device name? Format.
Should show up.
Well, it's not
here.
TV
type
zero.
It'd be have to be dev disk.
And then
oh, slash dev slash.
Yeah.
D0 or whatever. Or C7D0.
Dev DSK. Do an LS on dev DSK. Oh. Do your format again.
C7D0.
Control D. LS dev, I'm sorry, LS slash dev slash DSK C7 star. Oh, okay.
Okay.
This is something else that bites people. We talked about slices. There is one slice that is very, very important that you never, ever want to manipulate in the format command. That is slice number two. Slice number two is an overlay slice. It's basically a logical representation of the entire disk.
It's just like a PSJ slice.
Yeah, yeah.
X86 too?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, 2 is 0, 1, 2.
Yeah, I know Sun disk labels require that on Spark.
Yeah.
But it just brings that convention over.
I believe so, yeah.
If I didn't ask this at the beginning, but the YCD, is it only for the x86?
Yes, it does not run on Spark. So you would actually have to do your print VTOC on dev disk C7D0S2.
is a C7E0S. There's no this other. Unable to read this geometry. I said they got almost out of battery anyway.
Yeah. You know, maybe that's why.
Well, it's hard to see the auxiliary partition. So you can't really get into it.
But it should, it doesn't it translate the, because I've all my Solaris experience is on Spark, but it should.
Yeah, you can go into format and look at QF disk and see the partitions, but it doesn't have Solaris partitions.
It, well, yeah, I guess a VTOC, they haven't aliased VTOC over to print VTOC over to like an FDisk-L kind of a thing. Oh. Is what I was thinking they had done, but.
Well, we don't want anybody racing their hard disk.
Yeah. DD, IF equals dev zero. Let's see. UFS creates a UFS file system. UFS is the old, hopefully soon fading away file system. ZFS, which is the default on OpenSolaris, and which you get a choice when you want to install the newer releases of Solaris, does not need a UFS step. Really easy to deal with. So NewFS would pretty much be the equivalent to like a Makey2FS under Linux. Talked about disk device names a little bit. There's actually two directories under dev for disks. There is dev rdisk and there is dev disk. No I in either one of them. The raw disk is basically a raw device. That is what you would want to format with NewFS. You would actually mount the, for lack of a better term, cook device, which is going to be under dev disk. Removable media, things like USB flash drives, CDs, etc. There's a daemon called VolD, which you might think of as the other auto mounter. It's the removable media daemon. It checks to see, hey, has anything been connected? Do I need to mount it? It occasionally needs to be woken up with vault check.
What removable media will it accept?
Should do DVDs, CDs, flash drives. I think it does floppies if anybody still has a floppy drive.
But it also has a problem shutting off.
It looked like it ejected very nicely.
Well, I had ejected.
Anyway, Jerry, you were...
File formats.
There are a bunch of file formats that it supports, although they sometimes have different names than what you would expect to be. They don't call VFAT VFAT. It is, help me, PCFS, something like that?
Yeah.
Something strange. The CD file format is not ISO 9660. It is HSFS for High Sierra. There's a few other things which I can't remember what they are that it supports, though. Okay, another topic is a whole presentation unto itself. Software RAID, volume management. Mentioned UFS. If you want to do RAID 1, RAID 5, I think it will also do RAID 0, even though it's not really a RAID level, right? Your choice is pretty much Solaris Volume Manager as far as native tools. SVM is relatively complex to administer. It has some fairly goofy syntax. Various tuning things, setting things that you don't necessarily remember what they stand for all the time, or at least I don't. Requires a special slice for meta device replicas, or state replicas, database replicas. So if you're going to set up mirrored disks, when you are slicing up your disks, make sure that you take a small, like 20 meg slice and just set it aside. Don't put anything on it, because that's what SVM is going to need to keep track of its disks. ZFS, if at all possible, use ZFS. It's much easier to work with. It scales better, will make your life much easier, and really just a pleasure to work with. It's if you want to add another disk to a mirror, it's literally one command. It's very easy to work with. And the newer Solaris releases on x86 at least are using ZFS by default. Spark is still an option, although I think that's probably going to change hopefully shortly.
Are they booting from ZFS?
Yeah, ZFS boot does work on x86 and Spark both. Used to be it was only x86, but I think they got that working in U5, U6, something like that. PRT diag we talked about, under user platform name, whether it's x86 PC, Sun4U, Sun4V. There's also some Sun4M hardware that is really old and probably won't run Solaris 10.
Now, on the Logic CD, PRT diag wasn't under there. It was under user/SPEC.
It wasn't there on the live CD at all? It wasn't
It was under user/SBIN. It wasn't under user/plat.
User/SBIN PRT diag wasn't a symlink?
Nope.
No, interesting.
Unless LS-L on Solaris doesn't show symlinks.
LS-L on Solaris will tell you what a symlink is.
Not a symlink.
Interesting. You can tell that I used a Spark box to prepare these slides. PRTConf is another tool. It's fairly difficult to read. There's a verbose flag, which makes it even more difficult to read. But there is occasionally useful information in there. The thing that really helps me more than anything is var ADM message. The box comes up, it logs all the hardware it finds, shows that in var ADM messages quite nicely. A little bit unusual in that it actually shows you PCI device addresses. You kind of have to get used to reading that format, but it's all there. If you've got a laptop, look under /devices. You'll see what I mean. And then if you look under /dev, you'll see symlinks to the nodes under /devices.
I'm under what?
/devices.
I'm under devices, but what did you say to look at?
Yeah, look under /devices/CPUs. There it is. So if you look under /dev, it's actually a symlink to, if you look under /dev/DSK, it's a symlink to /devices/SCSI_VHCI. Disk addresses.
C2 C70 0 D0 2, which is the overall drive, right?
Yeah, so it actually shows you it's an IDE drive.
Okay.
Yeah.
The nomenclature is very similar to HP.
Is it?
Unix.
I have not used HPUX.
So these devices under there.
So if you were to CD into /devices/PCI@0.0.
Okay, I can hear the CD.
If you CD into here, you'll see all the nodes. And then these letters on the end are slices.
It looks like it uses a similar device in the format as the
You guys find the symlinks and slash devices? You do an ls-ls. Oh, is it? Cool. No, I'm not going to go crazy. That's what's on your hard drive. Maybe on all your PCI devices, there's in that directory.
I had a quick question. Mm-hmm. It's kind of off the wall, but I was looking under applications in Office on the GUI,
mm-hmm.
and I noticed that OpenOffice doesn't happen to be there.
I don't believe it's on the live CD. If you were to install that from your to your hard drive, I think you would actually need to download it. And it gives you an installer.
I guess I'm making fun of it. Widespread way. You think that's something that they
No, that I'm reasonably sure is intentional, correct?
I think it's just a matter of physics.
Yeah.
Well,
I
think it's
like 38.
But most issues of the OpenOffice come on DVD.
And it's got a package.
It's probably half the CD by the time you get on.
Yeah, it's huge. A little bit more hardware, device numbers. There is a file name called ETC Path to INST, Path to INST. Lets you rename device numbers on the fly.
Are these major minor numbers?
Yes. So if you've got, say, a couple of dual NICs, you want to make sure that everything is shows up under the correct and under the numbers that you want assigned to them. That's where you go to hard set those. And then you've got hot plugging capability for all sorts of devices. The old way is DevFS ADM, which still works. The newer way is config ADM, CFG ADM. Either way will let you scan for devices that are recently connected.
And then you still have to run disks.
Run what?
Disks.
Nope.
That's old school.
Yeah.
Does it handle hot swap of a long save inside as far as the device drivers?
Hot swappable SATA? Should. I mean, that's part of the specification, isn't it?
Well, first, I think generation. I don't mean.
Yeah, I have not specifically tried. So actually, I take that back. Yeah.
86 box that takes like 48 SATA drives in the front.
Yeah, I just thought of that. So yeah, it probably
sure
does. Okay, network configuration. This is not a simple matter of editing some files under etc sysconfig or running Red Hat config network or YAST or whatever. Unfortunately. You have a bunch of interlinked config files that all need to be right in order for your network to come up properly. Your host name, not your fully qualified domain name, but your host name needs to go in etc node name. Then, whatever interfaces you have, you put your IP address and host name for that interface in etc hosts. Netmask for each each network that you're connected to go in etc netmasks. Then you have an etc hostname dot whatever for each interface that's connected. And then that has a hostname in it. And when the system boots or when you reconfigure the network through SVC ADM, it will actually look at the hostname that's in hostname.interface, find that in etc host, and assign that interface that's in the hostname.interface file with the physical interface. Everybody confused yet?
How many beers?
It actually makes perfect sense if you look at the startup scripts that control all this, but it's
well, and you can do stuff like that in SMC.
Yeah, you can do it, in, assuming you have an image that has SMC installed. An Open Solaris ships with Network Manager. My personal preference is to uninstall it the first thing I do, but.
If it boots from the network, is it using an external or, let's say, something out on the net? So it's
post-file NetMask and all that, or is this a primary? In other words, does it look at this information first?
If you're booting from the network, it's not going to have access to this.
Okay.
It's going to need to do a DHCP or a Pixie boot or something in order to even come up with an IP address for its own interface.
Well, I think Open Solaris by default installs with DHCP.
Yeah, it assumes Open Solaris is going to assume that you're using DHCP, which is one of the reasons that I yanked Network Manager, because I don't think it does a good job with static IPs.
And if you want to add additional routes, it's still, you have to like add it to like your well, how do you do that now? Because you don't have like a local start.
There is actually a legacy script directory, and you can still create like an S70 routes or something under RC2.d.
And you still have to do that if you want to add additional routes.
Yeah, or you could create your own service for it too.
Yeah.
Although, I wonder how you'd have it monitor your routing table. How would it?
Well, it can use like NetSat or.
No, but do you really want it to monitor your routing table? You might want to manually change routes, and it says, "Oh no, that's not what it's supposed to be," and then it. Yeah. But no, on my Solaris 10 boxes at work, I've got a nice long etcrc2.ds70 routes that basically does a whole lot of route add. Default router goes in etc default router. That part at least is not confusing.
There's another network. There's a etcnet directory. There's an IP nodes file in there. You have to be careful because if you have a version 4 IP address in that, it'll override what's in the etcnodes file.
Yes. There's a bunch of stuff that's very similar to ETC INET. Most of it is hard linked. IP nodes you do have to be careful with. ETCresolve.conf, exactly the same as it is on Linux. NSSwitch, this spites everybody coming from Linux. Solaris does not have one NSSwitch file. It has about half a dozen. There is one for DNS, there's one for files, there's one for LDAP.
They're just templates.
Yeah, but they're templates. And then you can copy whatever template you want over to nsswitch.conf, and that's what you need to do in order to make sure that DNS is working, say.
At least some Linux distributions do the same thing. They have the templates. The nsswitch.conf.
Is the format of the file the same?
Yeah, format of the file is exactly the same.
Yeah.
So you base name, colon, source.
It's one of those things that Linux just basically copied over from Solaris.
Yeah. A couple of different ways to get your network to come up. Easy way is to reboot, or you can do an SVC ADM refresh network physical. Incidentally, if you find out that you've made a mistake in one of the config files you need to edit for your network settings, and then do that refresh network physical, it will fail. You'll put the network physical into a maintenance state, and it will take a bunch of other services with it, because it does have a concept of dependencies, and lots of stuff depends on the network being right. Netstat-nrv is probably the best way to look at the routing table. Without the -v, you don't get netmasks. Syntax for the route command is a little bit different than it is on Linux. It's fairly self-explanatory. A man page for a route will point you in the right direction. Incidentally, Solaris man pages, skip everything right at the top, go all the way to the bottom, look at the examples. Much easier that way. Plumbing. There is no plumbing on Linux that I've ever run across. For a device to be active, connected to the system, even though it's physically plugged in, if it is not plumbed, it won't be visible even in ifconfig. So the first thing you need to do when you add a new interface is ifconfig interface name plum interface name. If you want to remove it, and actually I think it removes it from the device tree, you unplumb it. So that's kind of a gotcha. particularly if you've got multiple network interfaces on one physical card, you want to bring up another one. If you don't plumb it, it's not there. And that about does it. Okay, that's another presentation on time. It's getting scary. Any questions?
Yeah, like mine didn't come up with the wireless card in the network. I mean, it looked like it's got an auto network.
Yeah, it uses Network Manager just like Ubuntu does.
So if it doesn't see the interface, can I bring it up with command simply similar to iwconfig?
There is a whole set of wireless tools that exist on Solaris, and it is
typical for most wireless tools. It's intricate.
Yeah, it's, I want to say, drawing a blank on the command name. It's like WY something.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the name of it is, though. There you go.
I didn't know it, like apropos. Yeah. Something similar to info pages?
No info pages. Pretty good man pages.
Info is very much of your
use. Yeah. I don't think you will see anything on the lines of info, or you will see an apropos, but there is a gotcha. There is a command called Catman, or at least there used to be. I'm not sure if it's still there or not. It used to be that for apropos and man-k and that whole thing to work, you needed to have an index of man pages built up, which for some reason was called Windex. So you'd have to actually run Catman on, and I think it was on a...
Catman-w.
Yeah, but -W. I remember doing it only on certain sections of the man pages because it took forever to run. But in any event, yeah, Catman. And
by
then
default, it goes through your man path.
Does, okay.
The difference in the man command, I believe, is you have to put -S in the section number if you want to specify a section number.
Yes, and the section numbers are slightly different on Solaris than they are in Linux. So man would probably be a good thing to look at.
You mentioned jumping to the bottom to look at samples of the man pages.
Mm-hmm.
Are the man pages better populated with samples than other?
I would say so, yeah. For the most part, there are exceptions on individual man pages, but my experience has been the examples in the man pages in Solaris are much better than they are in Linux. Oh, and docs.sun.com, all sorts of references there.
Is there also a in Linux kernel? There's a user source doc kernel name or kernel name documentation directory. Is there a similar thing for Sun kernel?
For the kernel, not really, because it's not somewhere you're going to be compiling the kernel. If you're following the developer builds and recompiling your entire system, there might be something. But day-to-day operations, there's really nothing like that that I've run across.
OpenSolaris kernel dynamic like the enterprise kernel?
As far as like loadable modules?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mod load, mod unload, mod info.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking in terms of like most of the parameters we used to put in the SSS probably don't even do anymore running in 70 because they're dynamically
too long to fly. Yeah, there are a couple of ways to do that. NDD, you could probably edit some of the files under kernel drive, unload and reload the module.
Wi-Fi config,
thank you. Anybody else?
Any other questions? All right, well, great.
Dan, we need a couple of numbers.